Welcome back, 12s, the Seahawkers podcast with Brandon Schultz and Adam Emmert. Today on the line, we have Johnny Ramona Peel. She's the author of one of my favorite Seahawks blogs. Probably my favorite Seahawks blog out there, Dave Craig's Strike Beard. You can find it at davecraigsstrikebeard.blogspot.com. Johnny, welcome back to the show.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me back.
I know. It's been such a long time, and glad we're celebrating a Super Bowl win since last time we talked.
That's right. That's right.
I know. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about your latest blog. I thought it was kind of funny how you characterized this win over the Raiders. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, I mean, like I said on my last blog post, this really felt like you know, I have the experience where, you know, sometimes you'll be driving around, you'll be hungry, and you'll drive by a Taco Bell. And I don't usually eat at Taco Bell, but if you catch me in the right mood, it'll grab me. I'll be like, oh, that sounds really good. And you'll talk yourself into it. Oh, how about a chalupa? Maybe a gordita? How about a quesadilla? And you buy it, and then you eat it, and you're full. And, you know, it was probably better than not eating anything at all, but you just feel like garbage for a while afterwards. And that's how I feel about this win. I mean, it's funny because I live in Columbus, and I kind of made a big deal the last couple of weeks about the difference between rooting for a big-time college team and rooting for an NFL team. And my point was, for example, last week, Ohio State, it took overtime for them to beat Penn State, right? So every Buckeye fan I knew was really, really unhappy with a victory. And that's sort of part of the problem sometimes of rooting for a big-time college team, because you're trying to get high in the rankings, you're trying to get into now into the playoffs. So there are situations where you can be really upset after a win. And I sort of rub that in people's faces here in Columbus. You know, I'm an NFL fan. I'm happy after every win. And I was saying this after we came back to beat Carolina. And what was funny was, after this week's game, I had to second guess myself a little bit, because I was like, I'm happier than I would be if we had lost, obviously, but I'm barely, you know, like if you had a happiness meter, I'd barely be one tick over neutral after this win, because it was a profoundly unsatisfying victory. And that's the chatter I've seen online, too.
Yep, just like Taco Bell, disgustingly satisfying.
Disgustingly satisfying and regrettable.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of at that point after the Carolina game, because I thought that this team was just that much better than Carolina. And so I felt that way after last week. So maybe this week it didn't impact me as much. I thought that the Raiders really were a better team than their, you know, winless record indicated. So it didn't really hit me quite as hard.
I think for me, and this is what I've been dealing with this really since the loss of the Cowboys, is I'm really sort of obsessed with the franchise's history. And while I'm still incredibly hopeful and we can still accomplish all of our goals, I worry because in many ways this season is starting to feel to me like 2004, which to me is, even though the season ends with us winning the division and going to the playoffs, in my mind was maybe the most traumatic, frustrating season I've experienced as a 12. And there's just too many parallels. I mean, you know, obviously coming off winning a Super Bowl is different, but I remember coming off of 2003 and, you know, the playoff loss in Green Bay. Expectations for 2004, a lot of us were talking about going to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl. So when that team just absolutely struggled, and they had these incredible, like losses with fourth quarter collapses against the Cowboys and the Rams. See, that was one thing that really set off alarm bells in my head. When in consecutive weeks, we had these awful, heartbreaking, brutal losses of the Cowboys and the Rams, which to me echoed 2004 way too much. And the win this week felt way too much like a win we had in 2004 against, I believe, was the one-win Dolphins. And we needed an interception return in the last minute by Michael Boulware to win that game by one score. Mm-hmm. So to me, right now, this season is feeling way too much like 2004 at this moment.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I like your blog so much, is because as a Hawks fan, you often do those parallels with former Seahawks teams, and it kind of does bring you back a little bit. So the first part of the season, you kind of feel like it's a little bit like 2004. How do you feel like the second half of the season will go?
Well, it's interesting because there's lots of reason for optimism, because obviously so many players were injured yesterday. Just the list of people who didn't play on Sunday, just really quickly. Jeremy Lane, Byron Maxwell, Malcolm Smith, Bobby Wagner, Russell Okung, Zach Miller, Jordan Hill, Cam Chancellor, Max Unger. And then Carpenter, Baldwin, and Greg Scruggs get hurt during the game. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's an incredible amount of injuries that we're dealing with. So we sort of had the good injury luck in 2013. And now, like, this is far beyond just regression to the mean. I mean, now we're seeing the other side of that coin that can happen to an NFL team, is that when you get hit by injuries, you have situations like we had Sunday against the Raiders. So, but the good news is these guys are going to come back. I mean, it looks like, for example, it looks like Jeremy Lane and Byron Maxwell might be back this week against the Giants. So, you know, I would expect that, you know, the team's performance is going to improve quite a bit just with getting these guys back. But here's what worries me, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we've got the Giants this week, and let's be honest, that's a game that we should win against a 3-5 team at home. That's a game we should win. But beyond that, if you look at the last 7 weeks of our schedule, they are mind-meltingly brutal. We have to go to Kansas City. Right? And then we get Arizona, and then 4 days later we go down to Santa Clara. Mm-hmm. Now, I know everybody's probably thinking right now that isn't as daunting of a task on Thanksgiving night as it was just a few weeks ago. In fact, if you look at it, what's really amazing is if you look at the last 7 games on our schedule, 2 of the 3 easiest ones, if we're just going based on opponent's record, are our 2 games against Santa Clara. Because right now they're 4-4.
Right.
You know, and then the quote unquote easiest game left on our schedule is the season finale at home against the Rams. But given what they've been doing lately, they're not necessarily going to be an easy out either. So on the one hand, you have the optimism that comes from we're going to get these players back. And, you know, best case scenario, the players that got in there and got experience, people, you know, like Marcus Burley, you know, Cooper Helfitt, all these other guys who got in there and got experience, they're going to be seasoned and more effective down the stretch. But yeah, Seahawks are going to face this gauntlet schedule down the stretch. And realistically, if you look at our schedule and Arizona's schedule, if we're going to win the NFC West, realistically, we need to sweep Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I kind of have the same feeling there. At the beginning of the year, or toward the beginning of the year, it looked like the second half of the schedule was a little bit easier, but now it's definitely not shaping up that way. I do want to go back. I want to talk about our Wilson to Wilson connection, or
right.
Wilson with 3 L's, as you often put it. Are these guys going to be able to get over the imbalance of L's between their names and make for a successful QB to TE tandem, or what's going to happen here?
You know, it's funny because they have like these moments you can hang your hat on. Because if you go back to the game at Candlestick last year, we ended up losing that game, but Luke Wilson scores this big touchdown during that game. And a week ago, Luke Wilson scores the winning touchdown in Charlotte. So it's not like Luke Wilson lacks talent, but I think the frustration with him is so large. And if you have conflicting information, let me know. The frustration with Wilson is so large right now is that I, according to somebody who tweeted at me on Twitter, is like, it was actually Cooper Helfitt that flubbed the onside kick that Jermaine Kearse ultimately recovered.
Oh.
You know, but in my mind, it was, I mean, like, it was Luke Wilson. That's how bad of a game he had catching the ball.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, I mean, you can argue that Russell Wilson's numbers from Sunday look much better if Luke Wilson is holding onto the ball. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like I tweeted out during the game, is a Robo Wilson needs to recalibrate his firing mechanisms. because he, and we saw this last week in Charlotte too. There were multiple instances in both Charlotte and Sunday against the Raiders where Russell Wilson flat out missed wide open receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And that worries me. I mean, he's our franchise quarterback. We're going to back the truck of money up to his house in the next offseason, as we should. But yeah, if you look at his performance really since the Monday night game in DC, he's made a lot of great things happen, and he's extended plays with his legs, and he's made big plays running the ball. But I am a bit concerned that his accuracy seems to have taken a dip in the last month or so.
Well, the one thing that where I have some optimism is that Russell Wilson is facing a Super Bowl winning quarterback coming up on Sunday, and he needs this win to kind of continue that perfect record he has against those types of quarterbacks. So
that's right.
You mentioned this is a game that the Seahawks should win, but do you see it going any other way?
No, I don't. I don't. I think that for one thing, even with the injuries, the Seahawks are simply a more talented team than the Giants. I think across the board, the Seahawks, you know, have an advantage just in terms of the talent on the roster. And I really don't like, from a New York point of view, the fact that they play on Monday night and they have to come to the West Coast to play the next Sunday afternoon. I would love to predict like a huge blowout win, but if you look at this season, one of the other things that jumps out at me is that we have only had one blowout victory,
mm-hmm.
and that was the opening game of the season against the Packers.
Right.
Every other win this season, it has been decided in the fourth quarter. I'd love to say something different. I'd love to say we're just going to go out there and murder plow the New York Giants, but it'll probably be another really frustrating game, but one that ultimately ends in a Seahawks victory, which is going to set up an enormous game at Kansas City, particularly if you're aware of the team's history of only having a couple of wins all time at Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah.
Hopefully we go in there 6-3 after beating the Giants this week, but that is the next real test. I think we should expect to win this Sunday, but then that Kansas City game is going to give us a really good idea if we're back on the road to Super Bowl contention. Because if we go out there and we lay an egg in Kansas City, it's going to be much harder to, you know, make the argument, okay, we're on this trajectory that'll take us back to the Super Bowl. Because just if you look at NFL history, I mean, yeah, you can look at the fact that 10-6, 9-7 teams have won the Super Bowl. But even in our more specific circumstances, you know, if you look, there's plenty of examples off the top of my head, two examples of teams that started the season 5-3 that won the Super Bowl. The 88 49ers, they started the season 5-3. The 2010 Packers, they started their championship season 5-3. So it's by no means unheard of that you can start the way we've started and then still end up going to and winning the Super Bowl. And then the one other thing I want to say about that is obviously it's preferable to get the number one seed and get home field advantage and go to the Super Bowl that way. But I have to admit, there is a part of me that kind of wants us to go to and win the Super Bowl with a greater degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
There's something appealing to me in the idea of winning at least one road game on our path to the Super Bowl. Yeah, I would never choose it over having a game, playoff game in Seattle. But there'd be a part of me that if we get to the end of the season, we have to go on the road, to Dallas or Detroit. There's part of me that would kind of relish that challenge as a fan.
Well, and I think you even said it in one of your recent blogs. You said it's time, it's that time of season where we manage our expectations a little bit to where we start thinking about the idea of going through other teams or going on the road and not being at home and winning an NFC championship at the Clink and having that be the only way we see our team going to the Super Bowl.
Now, just imagine this scenario for a second. Can you imagine? I mean, it's hard to top last year's NFC championship game, but could you imagine an NFC championship game or even just a divisional playoff game, a playoff game where we go down to Arizona? They have won the NFC West and they are trying to be the first team to ever host a Super Bowl in their home stadium. And we beat them and kill that dream. Would there be, could you imagine a more satisfying playoff win?
It would be glorious.
Than that? It would be amazing.
Absolutely. So, Johnny, I want you to tell a little bit of folks. I know last time we had you on, you talked a little bit about how Dave Craig Strikebeard came about, but we picked up a lot of listeners, and I really like the story about how Dave Craig Strikebeard got its name. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, in the 87 season, I was 12 years old. And that was obviously, maybe not obviously, but here's a little history lesson for the younger 12s.
Sure.
That was the player strike. It wasn't a lockout. It was a player strike. After I believe the third week of the season, second or third week of the season. And how the owners responded to the player strike is that they hired replacement players to cross the picket lines, and the NFL still, the game still counted in the standings. They still broadcast them on TV. And ultimately, that broke the union. That broke the players' union because the stadiums were just full enough, the TV ratings were just high enough for the replacement games that the owners could credibly threaten the players that we can keep doing this the rest of the season. And after three replacement games, and probably the most famous moment in terms of that for Seahawks fans, was when Steve Largent crossed the picket lines and participated in the last replacement game in Detroit. And we actually took him out of the game in the third quarter because he didn't want to break every single game receiving record in a replacement game. He ended the game with, I want to say, something like 9 catches for 250 yards and 3 touchdowns in less than 3 full quarters of play. Mm-hmm. And we won the game. And actually, sidebar about that is that the reason the Seahawks ultimately made the playoffs in 1987, they held the tiebreaker over the Dolphins. And they held the tiebreaker over the Dolphins because the replacement Seahawks beat the replacement Dolphins.
Wow.
but anyway, back to the origin myth, I guess, of my blog's title. During the player's strike, our quarterback, Dave Craig, grew this really bushy, like almost Fidel Castro or James Harden level beard, right? And he came back, and my memory of it was that, you know, he came back and we had games. We had a game at LA against the Raiders. We won, right, coming off the strike. We had a home game against the Vikings. We won. And so we went on this little bit of a winning streak right after the player strike. And I remember being 12 and thinking that it had something to do with Dave Craig's beard, his new beard. And then, at least the way I remember it, and it might be my brain making the wrong connections, but I remember him shaving the beard. Then we lost a game, and like that magic was somehow gone, irrational as that sounds. And in fact, if you go look up the 1987 Seahawks highlight reel from NFL Films, I'm not sure where it would be available online, when they're talking interviews with Dave Craig, he's got this bushy beard. And back in 2008, when I founded the blog, I was going through a bunch of different titles, and what stuck in my mind was Dave Craig Strikebeard. Also, it works out for me because Dave Craig is my all-time favorite Seahawks player to this day. So it's also a kind of a way to honor him. What's really funny, though, is naming your blog that means that half the time when people, like, address you in comments, they call you Dave. I've actually had people who will email the address I have on my blog thinking that I'm Dave Craig, thinking that the blog is run by Dave Craig. Oh. Which is one reason why I have a picture of myself on the front page of my blog. So, you know, obviously she's not Dave Craig.
Obviously. Oh, that's hilarious. Dave Craig, Strikebeard at blogspot.com. You can follow her on Twitter at DKSB17. Johnny, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you. I'll be on anytime.
All right. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.